Do it.
Don't break it. Spin that if necessary. Namaste and blessings. This Swami welcomes you with great love and great respect from the heart of all. Welcome to a midweek Type 1 Radio Lounge special, Sonic in Brighton, UK, and this Swami in Eastern Illinois at the Ashram on the River in the 100-acre woods. We welcome today Jennifer Palmer and Katie Walker, who have created an amazing documentary called Time is Art. And we're going to discuss synchronicity, we'll discuss past synchronicities, and perhaps hazard a guess at synchronicities yet to come. Jennifer, Katie, welcome, welcome, welcome.
Welcome to the lounge.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great
Thanks
to be here.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, definitely.
So, firstly, may I congratulate you on a beautiful film. It is just awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We're really excited about it.
When did the project start?
The project started, I would say, in an airplane in 2012. I think I was actually flying to Palenque. I was going to the Yucatan in Mexico, and I was reading this Jose Arguelles book called The Mayan Factor, and it was just this sort of like light went off in my head, you know, the reason I felt like we're so out of touch with just our being and the society at large. Everyone had this, like, I felt this extreme disconnection. You know, I felt like what it was, and it was part of what he was saying. It's like we were out of sync with this natural time idea, this idea of having, you know, a completely different clock that sort of made us want to work for money. And I just didn't see that connection until I was like flying in the airplane. And then whenever I made that connection, it was, and a lot of ideas come when I'm on a subway, I'm on my bike, or I'm flying. It just came to me, and then it took another good year for it to really formulate. But that was kind of the initial spark.
And so how did you and Jennifer get together?
I found Jennifer, I always try to remember the exact pinpoint moment, but I believe when I decided I was wanting to make synchronicity the sort of theme that was weaved throughout the film, I just started to try to look for people who wrote about it. And someone who was a writer was really what we were looking for. And then through pretty much probably some form of synchronicity, we found Jennifer. I believe it might have been through, I think it was like some radio show she was on where she was talking about synchronicity. And then I found another link that led me to maybe like Reality Sandwich. I think it was like one of her articles on synchronicity. So it was just kind of like, I'm not quite sure what the exact moment, but I believe it was some podcast you were on, Jennifer. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Not offhand. But we probably always telling, known like, each other, Katie.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's probably what it was.
That's why it's hard to remember.
Sure. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, for those who have yet to see the movie, the documentary, what occurs is Jennifer, at the passing of her aunt, experiences something outside the normal limits of time and space, the ones we've grown accustomed to, the ones we've been socially, educationally, and in many cases religiously conditioned to accept, which just simply are not the way things work. But until We have some experience, like Jennifer had. We just don't know the difference or the expanded point of view that's possible. And this experience sends Jennifer on a quest. She wants to know more. She wants to figure out how this works. What's going on? Why me? All these things that any seeker must get answered in some form or fashion at some point before they can just sit quite comfortably and naturally within the expanded point of view by whatever term you like to address them. Jennifer, would you mind telling us about the experience that kicked this off?
Sure, yeah. I just love the way you explain that too, because it is what we're trying to show in the movie, is something that is happening to so many people. And it's really just my story as a way of kind of being, you know, encapsulating or trying to just be an outline of what so many people are going through or have gone through or about to go through as they, as you said, wake up and realize, you know, that there's more to reality than we've been conditioned to believe. So yeah, when my aunt passed away, she actually, we had been very close and all my whole life, and she had always been a seeker herself. And in my family, that wasn't very common. And she went off in her own way. She decided to go live in Barcelona, Spain, and have a business there and really just try to live life on her own terms. Some might say she, you know, succeeded in some ways and didn't in others, but I saw her as a huge success because she was really happy and living in a place that she loved and with no rules except her own. And so I visited her, you know, there, and we had a beautiful time and we were close. And then at still a very young age, she was 50 years old, she got very sick from lung cancer suddenly. And when we went to see her, we were told that she still had many months to live. But as it turned out, the morning that we were supposed to leave and planning to come back months later to be with her again, or just a month later, actually, we were going to go regroup in the States. I felt compelled as we were about to leave to say, no, we've got to go back to the hospital. We have to go right now, even though we were in danger of missing our flight. And we got back there. The nurses on the floor were rushing over to us because they had just been trying to call our hotel where we had left to tell us that she had suddenly taken a turn for the worst and was probably dying right now, which she was. So we went there and actually got to be with her as she passed, even though we were supposed to have flown away. And that time with her and that experience was so powerful in so many different ways. I mean, it was really, you know, and this was before I had done really many psychedelics of any kind, and it was, you know, it's 2007, it was just a mind-blowing, kind of like a psychedelic experience, because it really did open me up to other layers of reality that are, I believe, there all along and all the time, but we just, as you were saying in the intro there, can't see them. So this broke open that, and from that point on, I was really stirred to try to figure out what I had experienced and try to initially refit it back into the framework of what I had already experienced as the world. But that didn't work. So here I am.
So your life up to that point, had you come across synchronicity? Were you writing at that point?
Not about that at all. Like, I had been writing some fiction and kind of just doing fiction on the side, and not really writing about anything like that. Nothing spiritual whatsoever. I was interested in philosophy and I studied that when I was younger, and that was always a passion of mine, but never in a sense of it being more than, you know, the old school like metaphysics. You know, so it was really still contained by reality as we know it, reality as we can prove it, you know, reality as we can see and feel it, and not, you know, it with this limited scientific model that we take as like this ultimate model. That's where I was. And so when this happened, suddenly synchronicities were everywhere and I was experiencing them all the time. And that was really the symptom that kind of went just like, it was almost like this was the event, the big thing that happened, and the synchronicities were like the tremors, you know, both before and after the huge earthquake that kind of opened up my life.
That's been pretty much within this Swami's experience, within the tradition that this Swami represents, being an East Indian tradition. This, until you have this trigger experience, it's all theory. You don't know any of it directly. You can agree with varying concepts and points of view and philosophies and think, well, that's all well and good and all shiny and, you know, unicorns and rainbows and love and light. But once this occurs, this trigger experience, now you've got to start getting some real answers because of the doubts and the confusion that come along with the trigger experience that the mind won't sit still for. So you have to go beyond what the mind was already well aware of, and you have to start turning within while carrying on the outward search for the answers.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's a pretty wild time, and I think it's one where a lot of people who go through it, and I was one of them, think, oh, I'm losing it. You know, I am. This is what it is. I'm losing it, and in a way, you are losing it. You know, you are losing the prefab notions of your life that you just came to expect. And what you're saying about feeling things too, it's like the mind can't take all this in at once, this kind of huge opening, and put words and definitions on it the way it usually does. So you're going on to this whole other way of being, which is, I think, the way that we're healthier being, which is letting your heart do it. So you don't need to understand everything, but you're feeling it with your body, you're taking it in, you're kind of getting to a point where you accept things instead of trying to parse them constantly for their meaning. And I think that was the beginning of a huge shift for me of not always having to know the answers theoretically, but knowing, I don't know anything now, you know, so.
I
love when you're talking about it needing to happen directly to you. I think most people that read about synchronicity, like Jennifer's saying, it can get in your head, you can be in your head, but until you've had that experience, that true experiential experience of synchronicity, you just don't know what it is, you know. And even making the film, I had to have a series of them in order for me to finally, around 2013, realize what the film was. I had to actually experience it. It was one thing for me to read it in a book and read about Carl Jung and like all this philosophical stuff, because just like Jennifer, I was really into philosophy too, you know, more Eastern, you know, and I'd been studying Buddhism, but it didn't really totally, you know, sink in until I had the experience, several synchronicities, and just one after another that were just like, okay, this is, I need to work on this film. There's something really to this.
Mm-hmm. So
sink in.
So Katie,
yeah, had to sink in.
What was your background before you've made this particular film?
I was definitely an artist. I think it was more of like, you know, I wanted to make a feature film. I wanted to make a documentary, but, you know, I didn't really have the team, you know. And then when my husband and I formed our production company, it was like, okay, let's just do this, you know. But I had always been I'd made a lot of music videos. I'd made like 4 albums. I'm mostly a musician. So it was... being an artist, you know, it's not an easy thing in this society. You know, you really don't, especially in the United States. It's different in other places where they kind of, there's a little bit more respect for the artist and the teacher. But like the teacher and the artist in the United States is just kind of, you know, it's all about money, you know, here. And it's just really, it was really tough for me to be consistently feeling confident that I could be an artist 24/7, you know. And so I was always, you know, putting out music. I started a record label in 2008. And it's definitely obscure, kind of, you know, pretty spiritual music. And even then, it's hard to find people who, you know, I mean, it takes a while to find your community in general, you know, because we're all so different. But, you know, it's just, it was really kind of daunting. And so it was a miracle. I always tell Jennifer, I was like, it's a miracle that this film was made. It's a miracle, truly. I mean, we, you know, not having executive producers and like the usual, you know, getting grants. It's really hard to get a grant for a film if you've not made a film. So it's always like the chicken before the egg. It's like a catch 22, you know? So I kept thinking, well, I mean, how do people get their films made if they can't get grants? And every person that's ever gotten a grant, they told me they never got a grant until they at least made like a short film or something. So with Time is Art, we started it off thinking it was going to be a short, but I mean, synchronicity is just like such an amazing, you know, rich subject matter that it was like, let's get this person, let's shoot here, let's do this. And then Jennifer's story was so interesting and we ended up weaving it through in her poetry, and we could have made a 3-hour film, you know, with as much content as we have. And we have like a DVD and a VOD release out now. You can purchase it on the website, and it's actually 5 bonus scenes, you know, because it was like, we literally had so much content and so much, you know, information and interesting subjects that were spiraled off of synchronicity, you know, that we put out this, you know, package deal or whatever, because it's a lot of information, and a lot of people, you know, they can kind of get overwhelmed. But I think with this film, you can definitely watch it over and over again, you know. And it was hard to make, especially this is me and my husband's first film. And it was just a miracle that it was made. You know, there were so many challenges along the way, but ultimately it was just the subject matter, I think, that really made it happen, which is pretty crazy.
So it's a synchronicity itself.
Yes, yeah. It was, absolutely.
Definitely.
It was, could you absolutely, give us
the website real quick?
Yeah, the website is the sync. Yeah, the Sync Movie. You know, of course, there's the syncbook.com. So it's just, it's spelled the same way. It's the Sync Movie. You know, the and then SYNC, yeah, movie.com. Yeah,
excellent. And we'll put a link up to the show page of the show when I put it on the website, so everybody can just click and go to the page.
And the Facebook is the Sync Movie too, and the Twitter is the Sync Movie, and everything is the Sync Movie on social media, so you can find us.
Did you do any crowdfunding for it?
Yes.
Yeah,
well,
that's what got us where we are. that's the community came through.
They did, and Jennifer had met. Where did you meet Gary Bobroff? Jennifer, how did you hook up with him?
Gary Bobroff and I met working actually on a Syncast, my webinar company. We did a course with him on crop circles and Jung and the return of the archetypal feminine, which is an amazing course based on his book, which is the same title. And it's really cool because it's so much of what the movie is kind of echoing and resonating with, again, this return to a different way of being, a different way of, you know, of being on the earth, which is from the earth, not trying to master the earth, being more, you know, connected to our feminine energy, something that Jung wrote about. And so I think part of what and it was interesting that had such a weird connection to what the film was going to be about, because I wasn't thinking of any connection between the two. But when, in the course of working on with Gary, he mentioned that he was also hosting or putting together a synchronicity symposium at the Joshua Tree, it suddenly occurred to me that maybe we were also working together because we had another project to do, and that was, you know, bringing this film crew out to help him with some stuff out there, but mainly to also get us connected with the people who were going to be headlining out there, who included Graham Hancock, Rupert Sheldrake, and Rick Tarnas. So we were, you know, lady to get them and then get them on the film, which is what we did. So that was a synchronicity in a way that was so obvious because it was about synchronicity, and it was about what synchronicity is a symptom of, and that's this reemergence, I think, of this new way of being. So it was great.
Yeah, we raised the money to go to the Synchronicity Symposium. We raised about $5,000 just for the initial Indiegogo, and so that was what allowed us to go out there, hook up with Gary. You know, we actually were able to make a couple of really interesting videos that are also on another YouTube channel, Things Are Changing, that had Rick Tarnas talking about synchronicity. And, you know, and then Gary, in his film, I mean, his scene in the film is really powerful. He, of course, describes the, like, famous Carl Jung scene with the patient and the scarab beetle. And so Gary was just like super crucial. And then, you know, again, it was just like the crowdfunding allowed us to get out there. And then our second crowdfunding pretty much allowed us to pay for the sound mix, the color correction, and then, you know, just obviously build our audience. I felt like we got a lot more international people interested in knowing about the film, because it's also going to be in Spanish and Russian. So that'll be part of our, you know, our VOD. Yeah, it'll be in Russian. And we had like just a Russian, we had three Russian translators email us and like, you know, I will translate your film. And it was just like, you know, amazing. We've had people from the Ukraine that wanted to bring the film out. We've had a lot of Spanish speakers, you know, so I think there's just a lot. I mean, a lot of people gain a larger audience through crowdfunding. We definitely did that.
And I think it's just indicative
too. Kindly allow this
woman
to ask. Oops, sorry, go ahead, Jennifer.
No. I just was going to say it's just the feeling of the community support, which really has just like empowered us to this next level, because it's because of them that we're doing it, you know, and feel their backing. So that's all I wanted
exactly.
to say.
Did y'all do something particular with the color in this? Because that was one thing that was immediately apparent to this Swami on doing
it. Yeah, it's color corrected.
Just the richness of the color.
Yeah, it's professionally color corrected. This guy, Eric Alvarado, he actually color corrects for Comedy Central, like a lot of their TV, you know, stuff. If you're into Daily Show and all those shows that are on Comedy Central, he works like out of his house. It worked out. It was, again, another synchronicity. Like he literally was working this, you know, we reached out to him like a year ago, and because he's color corrected all of our music videos. And I was like, Eric, you know, are you available? How much is it going to cost? Because normally it costs an astronomical amount to color correct. I mean, it's really time consuming. And it was like a 2-hour film, you know, originally, and then we cut it back. So I was like, Eric, you know, are you available? And it just was, it matched up. Like, I'm telling you, the sound people that really helped us fix our sound and do the sound mix and add a lot of extra sort of dimension and to the sound, you know, he also was synced up perfectly. And then in Eric's case, he actually like quit his day job and was doing freelance, you know, so he was super excited to work on a film because he's mostly doing TV. So, I mean, the whole time he's just like, I love this film. And he's like the type of guy that you wouldn't expect to be into really deep philosophical stuff. Like, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really know him personally, but, you know, he was so excited to work on a film like this. It was like every 5 minutes he was just like all about it. Like there was never any issues with like, oh, I don't think I can do it. I mean, he was just like, I love this film. So it turned out really cool to have that kind of support too on the really kind of tedious part of making the film, which is the sound mix, you know, which we worked on the sound mix for like 2 months. You know, it was crazy because the composers wanted to change some of their music. And so it was like back and forth. And, you know, it was just a tremendous amount of work. And I have to give shout out to like Matt from Time Wheel and Eric Alvarado for like making it happen.
Yeah.
Well, they've done a fantastic job. It all fits just perfectly. It's really, really well shot. All the sort of like just slow camera across and well done.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Well, these guys were professional every step of the way. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's one of the things that if folks have appreciation for filmmaking and the art that is, they'll notice all these subtle little bits and pieces and how it all just comes together into just an outstanding. I mean, this Swami was sitting here with bhakti tears of joy flowing as you were realizing this big scope of things, you know, and so different than the way you grow up and the way that you're conditioned and what you accept as reality. And then when you begin becoming exposed to the greater view, wow, it's just, and it was so interesting. Jennifer is such an intellectual person, so wordy, you know? So she's got to have all these wordy questions requiring wordy responses in order to get this to sink in a way that makes what the immediate feeling was then make sense to the mind, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that came through, because that was definitely the challenge slash, you know, amazing opportunity to kind of play with that. And I think the filmmakers were able to, I mean, aesthetically, it was so, we connected, because as you're saying, like, there are these shots, Nick, as you were saying, there are these shots about, you know, that are just so beautiful and thoughtful. And I think part of that is holding on to that feeling that isn't able to be totally expressed by the words that are going around, but is trying to be, and we're getting closer to something. And then, you know, it's like poetry. You don't totally hit it, but you feel it, you know, and that's where you can really feel something. And I think that's some of my favorite parts of the movie, when there's that kind of almost like a reverberation that you're not really sure what it was, and you just feel it, and it's really amazing. And yeah, so I think, you know, it's just so much of what I hope is being conveyed by my journey in the film, is that I'm so much like everybody, so many other people out there. Like, I didn't, you know, I think some people get intimidated when they first start opening up spiritually, because two spiritual things, I should say, because everybody seems to know so much. Like, I, you know, would go around when I was first, like, looking into this stuff, and go to, like, kind of spiritual type meetups, and people would be talking mm-hmm. about yoga and meditation and what they were eating and how they weren't eating sugar and all the things that I wasn't doing. And I felt like, well, what am I, you know, I don't fit in here. But that's not the point of this movie. Is we all are having this journey, and that we all fit in, and we're all perfect exactly as we are for having this journey.
Yeah.
So
that was one of the best parts, is that it demonstrates in a very, you know, in your particular case, we all get on the spiritual superhighway at some entrance. It doesn't matter which one. If you will make any attempt, then whatever else is necessary will quite naturally flow in your direction. And then you can step from different, you know, systems and different philosophical points of view, until you finally get to, you know, the full experience. And then all of this is just the new normal. It's just the way yes. life works. And then it's no longer
the new
confusing.
Normal.
Or, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
it's, yeah.
So what was the Synchronicity Symposium like? Was that on for a few days?
It was on for three or four days. There was like an extra day of some other workshops, but three main days out in Joshua Tree over a weekend. And it was amazing. The Joshua Tree is an amazing place. It's a very powerful spot. You can tell, even if, again, I don't, you know, and I talked to some people in the film about power places and things that you know, because it's, again, it's just another thing to learn about, another thing that you might feel but not know why. But that's definitely a spot like that. And so doing a symposium there about something like synchronicity just kind of amplifies everything, and the people wanting to be there for that subject matter. And what I thought was beautiful was that it was really, the conference itself was kind of a demonstration of how we can use synchronicity in our life as a tool among many others. And so by noticing your synchronicity, sharing the story, sharing them with others, you know, realizing that we had shared synchronicities over the course of the weekend, as we all, you know, got to know each other and formed a little community, the conference participants, and that the story is not one that is only to be known with your head. And so it was a conference with lectures by people like Graham Hancock and Rupert Sheldrake and Jill Peirce, and just a lot of amazing, Gary Bobroff, Nina Elshoff, so many amazing people there. But so you got this verbal information and slideshows, but then you would go and do yoga, or you would chant, or you would paint, or you would go take, you know, walk through the desert, and then you were doing another kind of learning, and that's learning with the body and feeling that. So it wasn't this, like, we must learn one way. It was like, let's take this information, let's live with it, let's feel it. And I think that's so much of the shift that's going on that synchronicity is a symptom of. So it was really beautiful to have it play out that way.
And I want to mention for the European audience, as well as Gary and Nina, Gary S. Bobroff and Nina Elshoff, they're going to be doing an event in Holland. So if folks want to know more about it, they can go to thesyncmovie.com. And the website's on there. It's all in Dutch, and I can't read it, but I don't even know. I'm not sure how to pronounce
it's
the name of the town.
It's a synchronicity event, though, you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a really cool event. They're going to screen the film. Gary's going to do a Q&A. And then Nina, who incidentally, her extra scene in the film is about the power places, you know, and she talks about being inside the Egyptian pyramids and sort of syncing up with that sort of energy that you can't see, that you only feel. So that's happening again on 11/11. We have like a worldwide sort of premiere thing that's happening. So we have it in a bunch of cities in the U.S. And then we were able to get one in Holland. So that's super, super exciting. So go to thesyncmovie.com and check that out.
And here.
And yeah, in Lowe's.
Yes, Lowe's? Can't forget that.
Lewis.
Lewis.
Lewis. I knew I was pronouncing it wrong.
Lewis.
Lewis.
Yeah.
Oh, Lewis. Okay. Oh, it's pronounced Lewis? Okay. Yeah.
And interesting, the place where we're going to be showing the movie at Zoo Studios there in Lewis, Rupert Sheldrake has talked in the same room.
Sweet. That's awesome.
Quite a lot of the people that will be attending probably went to see him speak there.
I love it.
Perfect.
Love it.
Yeah, he talked about
tradition. No, go ahead, Kate.
Oh, well, I was just going to say he talks about, you know, consciousness in the film and his big thing that's an extra scene in our film as well, because we had so much content, is he talks about telepathy and synchronicity and how Jennifer, I just watched it, so I don't know if you remember, but she was talking about, you know, when you think of somebody and then they call you. And she was like, that's kind of the most sort of common synchronicity. And he was talking about how basically that's a form of telepathy in the same way, you know, synchronicity and telepathy kind of are similar. So I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Same, different sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Within this Swami's tradition, it's a very firmly taught and held fact that as you go deep, the attachment to the structured, outwardly focused mental concepts will decrease as your love for the unseen increases and your trust in that increases immensely. And you just find the right things are happening. The mind will toss all kinds of doubt and confusion in the way. But if you can just go, shh, quiet, not right now, and then just experience these things directly, consciously, you got it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. Getting to stillness was something, you know, that I never even occurred to me, even with my studies of Western philosophy. It wasn't until experiencing this kind of overwhelmingness of my head and heart being broken open that I needed to find a way to stillness, that it became something that was the counterpoint to what was going on and then became the focal point to what was going on. So it's been such an amazing journey. And as you're saying, things, if you're able to put your fear, to feel your fear, but then let it go and just move forward with some form of faith in what's happening, some form, even if you don't believe in anything or don't know if there's something to believe in, you believe in what's happening, that there's something magical in these coincidences that keep happening and keep seeming to bring people and things and books and movies and even objects into your life that are magically meant to be there. To just even believe in that alone and just to keep walking forward with that, it just, everything else comes into place. So it's just about not having fear, in my experience.
Right, right. Which is pure mind. I mean, that's what mind does. Its only job is to separate, weigh, measure, assess. That has no diversity whatsoever, but it must make it appear to have diversity and inequality
and separation.
Good, bad, down, all the rest of that, but that's the mind's job. But you are not that. The mind is a tool that is a terrible master, but an awesome servant once you put the leash on the monkey mind.
So it would seem that this film, even though it's been quite a task and a journey for you all, it seems that everything sort of fell into place. Is that a good analogy?
Yeah, I think. I mean, I think that is that's a good way of putting it. And I think it was, it's kind of like we decided to make this film on this subject matter, and early on, we all realized that by making this decision, by putting this intention out there, that it's something that wants to be known on some level, not synchronicity necessarily itself, but I think that the shift that it's symptomatic of and what's happening for so many people, it's information that wants to get out there. So I think that kind of, once we started, we said, okay, we want to do it, it did kind of come into place. It came into place, though, not without personal transformations for all of us. I'll speak, you know, for myself mainly, but I know it's the case for everyone involved with the film. And I think that's also indicative of the subject matter and also indicative of the power of the information. So we kind of, you know, went through it, you know, and went through some real, like, what, you know, personal, not only experiencing synchronicity maybe on another level, but you know, experiencing all sorts of feelings and doubts, and then also elation and you know, excitement about the subject matter and trying to shepherd it through. So I think it was definitely a journey, you know, a journey where things did fall into place, but it was probably not the journey we originally thought it was.
I know, right. It was definitely us growing. And I mean, in order for it to fall into place, we had to really understand what time, like the idea of what time is art as opposed to time is money. You know, you had to really be flexible. You had to understand the limited resources. You know, we're Joelle and I are like, you know, pretty grounded. We're kind of like, you know, this is where we're at. We have limited resources. Whereas some people tend to want to do really outlandish things with films. But, you know, given our ability to work with just kind of the basics, you know, and understanding what's kind of needed, it sort of fell into place in the sense that it's a raw, you know, naturally lit. Like we never did anything with the over the top, you know, production value with the lighting, like you'll see in a lot of Talking Heads documentaries. There's, mm-hmm. It's just raw. And I think that people that are artists are really drawn to the rawness, because as an artist, the rawer that you can come across, I think the more authentic it is, you know, the less overworked it feels. So other than like the writing, which Jennifer can attest is the hardest part. I mean, you know, being a writer, I think is the hardest art form. You know, it can be really lonely. It can be really intense, you know. It's a very, you know, time consuming process. Words are sometimes the hardest things. There's the simplest things, but yet they're the most complicated things to get right. So we rewrote it many, many times. I mean, she probably went out of her mind, you know, re-recording stuff. But the voiceover was so crucial. And so, you know, luckily when I first started to work with Jennifer, she gave me like a ton of kind of stream of consciousness stuff, which is what I love that. Like, I love just things that are sort of stream of consciousness. So it was easy for me to work with and to edit down. You know, there was, you know, when you try to formulate a nonlinear story, poetry is one of the best things to work with, you know. And so we were really trying to do something that wasn't so linear, you know. We wanted to do it experimental, but then we also wanted it to come across like in a clearer way than, like, for instance, one of our films that I was subconsciously replicating in my mind for a really long time is Waking Life. It's this film by Richard Linklater. He is like he actually got pretty well known recently because this film that he made, it took him 12 years to make it, called Boyhood. Mm-hmm. And it actually chronicles like this kid's life for 12 years. So, you know, he really is cutting edge in what he does with his films. And so he made this film called Waking Life. I think it was like the 90s. And I was in college at the time, and I was around the people working on it. And it was all about, they had reincarnation in it and all these sort of Eastern ideas, because he's a Buddhist. And it was like pretty out there for me at the time. Like I always resonated with Buddhism. It always made perfect sense to me, you know. But I honestly, my heart hadn't been cracked open completely. I was coming more from like the philosophical head space. I mean, I felt music and certain things, you know. I felt dance, you know, but it wasn't really resonating, like the whole, you know. And I didn't really know about synchronicity at the time, which is one of the things that really helped me feel like I'm definitely on a spiritual path. That and like Native American you know, ceremonies and things like that. That's what really helped me on the spiritual path, you know. But watching his film, I think it was kind of, it was a spiritual film in some ways. I mean, I think the average person that watched it was like, oh, it's so cool. It's got this rotoscoping, you know, the painting. And but I love the idea of this guy, of this kid who I actually knew, the actor, walking around town. He was walking around Austin, which is like this really cool, like, I mean, at the time it was like a pretty hippie town and everybody sort of like doing their own thing and it wasn't really materialistic and it was a great place to go to school. It's changed, unfortunately, but so the guy's walking around town and he's talking to all these kind of interesting people, you know, and I just loved that idea that, you know, somebody can just walk through a film. Jennifer pretty much walks through the film. You kind of don't know who she's necessarily talking to. You don't, you're not caught up in like, oh, is this a famous person she's talking to? Or, you know, you don't get the lower thirds, which tells you who she's talking to. You don't know where she is. People are always like, where is this? Is that San Francisco or is that Brooklyn? Oh, or you're in, are you in Joshua Tree? Or, and I'm like, they're like, Joshua Tree, where's that? You know, so the idea that they don't, like, just like Waking Life, you don't know where he is and you don't even know who he's talking to. But it's because it's just about the experience of oneness, of having just this idea of everyone is the same and they're all just going through this journey together. That was kind of the big sort of like inspiration for the film. And so I think it came across that way, but with a little bit more education, because I think some people were kind of mad at Waking Life a little bit. They were like, oh, well, I really wanted it to kind of make a little more sense. I really wanted him to get more into the, you know, deep, a little more deep with it, you know? And so I feel like we took it one step further and we really went deep. I mean, this is a deep film. It's a transmission. It's like, it's deep. And you can watch it five times and get different information from it, you know? And so I think that that's what we ended up doing when we watched it. We didn't even get half some of this information, you know? And now that we've seen it 10, 20 times, of course, like, we get it. But it's pretty deep, you know? It's a deep subject that we... By the way,
very, very well done in excluding... the names of the speaking individuals so that you're not then pulling up that mind reflex of who is this? What do they have to say? Have I heard of them before? Are they good, bad, or indifferent? You know, all of that was left out. It was only what they had to say from their, from their perspective. And well done with that. That was outstanding.
Thank you for, for that. I really am so happy that you resonate with that. And I think that that's what we're really going for, because a lot of people, they that would most of the people that would respond, they were like, well, why isn't it, you know, why doesn't it have these lower thirds, and, you know, the people's names? And it was, to me, it was an artistic like choice. It was also the choice of, I don't want to take people out of it, because it is a movie. You know, you are experiencing, you are following Jennifer and you're sort of in her head, and like, I didn't want her for a second, if this was like real and we're following her, for her to be like, oh my God, I'm talking to Graham Hancock. Oh, what do I do?
Like, although I was like that.
Although
he did
a really good job. He did a good job, because he was the only person that just seemed so much larger than life that I was
all did, Katie. There were a lot of larger than life. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I felt okay with everybody. He was the one where I was just really nervous. Sheldrake, he's such a nice person and he's kind of silly. He's like a funny person.
You're making it sound like Graham wasn't a nice person.
No, he was. He was just intense that day because he was like stressed out, you know, because I mean, he'd been interviewed like 20 times, I think, or something. Yeah. Like, he was overworked, but it worked out. His wife, Santha, really came through, you know. It was synchronicity, the whole thing, you know, going to a symposium that's about synchronicity, you know, where we were able to get these people. That in itself was incredible. It was magical, really. And I think also the last thing I'll say about is the magical aspect of synchronicity. You know what I mean? The magic of it is what it's about. Like the world is magical. It's not just all, you know, it has an element to it that if you just open yourself up to it, you'll see the magic. Yeah, you're going to see the darkness probably most of the time, but you will see especially if you're even a pessimistic person, and Jennifer and I share that quality. Like I used to be pretty pessimistic, and I went through the thing where I was really only focused on kind of the negative sides of things and like, you know, the world is coming to an end, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it was like synchronicity is the thing that really opened me up to the magic in the world.
Yeah, it makes you smile, and it's recapturing your imagination. you know, Disney's one of Disney's slogans is capturing imagination, and I think synchronicity acts as a way for us to recapture our imagination and have fun with it.
Totally.
Well, and it's the synchronous events and introductions and just all of that. You know, once when you're first introduced to it, or you first begin to experience, the mind just spins and spins and spins because this doesn't make linear logical sense. You can't connect it to any particular curriculum or stream of religious teachings. It's just happening. It's all happening right now. Right now, not later, not yesterday, right now. And if you can let go with the mind of the linear, the logical, the curriculums, the expectations, which equal frustrations most of the time, then you can be in this enormously rich right now without all that baggage. And you can move and play and enjoy others and just express in whatever way is most natural for you.
That's beautiful.
I love the fact that it doesn't have the religious connotations. Like, I think that that's what's so great about synchronicity is it's not tied to a religion. You know, there's no baggage. Yeah.
So how far into the process of the movie did you, Jennifer, go up to? Did you go up to Winnipeg to meet
Jake and Jim?
Jake and Jim, or did they come down to New York?
Well, Jim's in the film. Jake isn't, but Jim's in the film, and he was filmed when he was in New York, where he comes, you know, a couple times a year. And so we were lucky that worked out schedule-wise. It wasn't, you know, just the expense of taking a crew out to Winnipeg. That had been something I had really pushed for at one point in the production, but I knew it was just going to require an element of cash that we probably weren't going to be able to get. But that said, Jake is has a thank you in the movie and in my heart, because of course for me he's the main person who's, you know, when I found him online during that time of my head and heart being broken open, he was a guide for sure to an idea that this wasn't, yeah, maybe I was losing it, but I was also, you know, gaining my heart, you know, and I could trust in that and go with the synchronicities and not believe that they were, you know, making me, you know, lose it for forever, you know, and I was,
So many think of losing mind as a negative, whereas the truth of the matter is you're only losing your limitations. You are then opening to every possibility and things you could never have thought of with your prior condition.
Definitely. And that is, it's kind of like the boundaries that you used to believe were between you and other people and other things. And even in the now moment, making it a little narrow now moment, as you were saying, Swami, that into this huge moment where the now is filled with infinite possibilities that you're open to, and it's so much richer. That's overwhelming, you know, that's again this kind of boundary loss that you're so used to. And I think having someone like Jake out there who's so calm yet so open about the fact, like, hey, yeah, I lost my mind too. You know, I lose it a lot. And I go into movie theaters and I sink so hard, I think about running out, you know, like, but like, that's that, for him to be that brave and that open and yet also so calm, you know, it was a real way of approaching this whole transformation for me that I needed. So to answer your question, he's not explicitly filmed, but he's throughout the entire film, he's throughout every part of my journey, you know, whether then or now, he's, you know, definitely a guide and a teacher for me.
So had you met them before you started this project then?
Yeah, I met them back in 2010. I had met them, on Jake and Jim, online in 2008. So we kind of knew each other, just like you were talking about. We knew each other and then eventually met in real life. I went out to Winnipeg. I was working with Daniel Pinchbeck and Evolver at the time. So I went out to do a screening of 2012 Time for Change. And we did it out there. And so that was a good occasion to connect with them. And then years later, you know, we just have built this continuing friendship and, you know, go back. I go back and forth to visit them and they go back and forth. Well, Jim goes back and forth to visit me. Jake is still working out some visa issues, but hopefully he'll be able to do that as well soon.
Yeah. So. Isn't he getting his citizenship soon?
He might be. yeah, there's some kind of English test that he apparently has to take that I was like, well, I'm pretty sure, Jake, since your English is like superb, like that shouldn't be an issue, but I don't know. It's a little bit more complicated.
Maybe he has to learn to say a boot.
Exactly. He's got to use Canadian English, and that's a whole other thing.
Sorry, Sonny.
That part of the film, it looks the way it's shot, because you've got bits of Tonkiri in there, haven't you, of Jim's film. It looks like you've gone to Peru to do the ceremony. It looks wicked.
I know. Yeah,
don't tell anyone. Yeah. It's just the magic of filmmaking. Jim like hooked us up with that footage, which I'll have to say we did source a lot of footage from a lot of different people because people were just, you know, excited to be a part of it. So we have a lot of cool aerial photography. We got these crop circles from these guys in England called, now I'm totally spacing on what it's called, Gyro. They basically use the GoPro and then they just put it on the little aerial helicopter thingy, drone things. Yeah. So that was cool, you know, and they were like, you know, just like, sure, you know, just give us credit. And then Jim was super amazing giving us that footage. It's just a beautiful footage. And it was such a part of her journey, you know, opening up to the plant medicines, you know, for us to really see her kind of that transformation happen. So that footage was like crucial.
Yeah. What was really amazing about that footage, too, was that I had gone to Winnipeg. Shortly after we went to the Joshua Tree and did the filming there, I went to Winnipeg to meet up with Jim, and he had his film premiering at the opening of the Canadian Human Rights Museum there in Winnipeg, and Juan Flores was there from Peru, and so we did ceremony the night before the big premiere, of course, and so we do ceremony, and Juan said, you know what, I want the ceremony to be filmed. And he doesn't know about our film. He doesn't, that I know of. He doesn't know. I didn't tell him about it. He doesn't know about, you know, like, okay, he just says, I want the ceremony to be filmed. We're like, all right. And is that possible? And we're like, sure, because Jim has all the equipment. It also meant that the ceremony was lit up with candles, which I had never experienced before. Usually in ayahuasca ceremonies that I do with Jim and Juan, it's totally dark. But we had these candles. Everybody who was there knew what was going on and agreed to it. And for no reason, we're going to film this because we just filmed the ceremony, and that was it. And so then we had this footage, and Jim was like, maybe someday it'll be in a future installment of my movie, or I don't know, but we have this. And what was beautiful about it was because the candles were on, it wasn't that kind of scary night vision filming that you get with a lot of ayahuasca ceremonies. We look them up online, and people look kind of like alien faced and stuff. But this was just, as you'll see in the film, people look kind of normal, you know, like, and so. It ended up that after that happened, and then, you know, we're going on and we wanted to put a scene of me, you know, in ceremony in some way. We're like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we had some footage? I'm like, well, we do have footage. And if Jim would let us use it and if Juan was okay. And of course they were. So it's just amazing again about how this works out, because that footage was obviously in part made for our movie. You know, so
now to wrap up, what is the focus at this moment and towards future moments for Katie and for Jennifer?
Katie, you want to go first on that?
Okay. yeah, for me on a just personal spiritual path, it's just to stay on the path, you know, as much as I can, given the hardships that we experience, you know, with with just the state of the world and kind of feeling like one day, you know, we're all sort of becoming more conscious and the next day we're sort of taking two steps back, you know, with whatever the government's doing and whatnot. So I think it's just trying to, you know, understand that for me, there's a lot of darknesses that are happening and that's for us to grow. And so whenever I'm in a challenge and, or I'm seeing the world as it is, which is, it can be very, you know, it can be very disappointing with what is happening in the world with just, you know, the constant bombing and, you know, in Iraq and the Middle East and whatever the government's doing, my taxpayer dollars are going to hurt people. Just say, okay, look, I'm working on this conscious media project and I'm, you know, I'm okay with that. So that's just more on like a psychological, spiritual level for me. And then as far as just going forward, you know, we're planning to do workshops around this film. There's a book that Jennifer's writing. There is, you know, a lot of additional content that we have on our website. Look, if you're a true seeker and you want some more information, you know, we've got that on our website. So it's just kind of pushing the film, you know, as much as we can, getting the international audience. We're going to hopefully have it screened in Guatemala in January. So get the Spanish speakers and the Russian speakers exposed to this, you know, type of film, which we've had great support. It's just about, you know, getting it down there and then, you know, being able to travel with it potentially maybe in the summer to do these kinds of co-creation type workshops or workshops where we're sort of like taking synchronicity and applying it in a really cool workshop type setting. We did a few Excellent. When we were doing it in the Indiegogo campaign. We did 3 or 4 and it was cool. It was like people that weren't totally up on synchronicity, but then they were like, oh, I know what synchronicity is, you know, once people kind of shared their stories. So yeah, taking it to that next level, which is more of the tour, you know, we'd love to come to go to Winnipeg, you know, we'd love to go to all these different places and actually be there and have like, you know, more community built around the film and the ideas in the film. And then, you know, other projects,
Thank you,
Katie. Of course.
Thank you very, very much. Jennifer?
Oh, my bad.
Jennifer?
Yes. Just real quick, just trying to just move forward with no fear. It's the simplest, the most complicated. It's everything, and it's the message I've been getting more and more. Whatever I do, to try to do it with less fear, no fear if possible. So that's it.
There you go. Outstanding. Jennifer Palmer and Katie Walker from the film is art. Get your hands on it, get your eyes on it, and get your heart into it. Thank you so
thank
much.
You
Sonic, you got anything?
Yeah, and we must also thank Joel, who couldn't make it today, but he's in LA at the moment, isn't he? So big love to him. And to play out, we had a suggestion from another Sikh brethren from Australia, Darren Brew. He wanted us to play out with Rolling Stones. She's like a rainbow.
So, love it. Thank you guys so much.
I hope you don't get sued for that. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
The head.